Wake Up America, time to stump the experts. Each week at this time, H.J. Heinz Company, makers of the famous 57 varieties, give you information, please. A quartet of experts is on hand to answer your questions. Send them to Information Please at 570 Lexington Avenue, New York 22, New York. We may edit them a bit, and in case of similarity, you'll have to accept our judgment of who shall be paid. Please note that if this year we use your question, which is postmarked any time between now and December 31st, you will get not the usual $10 in war stamps, but a $50 war bond, plus a set of the 12-volume Britannica Junior Encyclopedia. If we muff the question, you get in addition $57 in war bonds and stamps, plus a 24-volume set of the regular Encyclopedia Britannica. All questions remain our property. Information, Please, is presented under the supervision of Dan Golenpohl. And now, our master of ceremonies, Clifton Fadiman.
Ladies and gentlemen, going along in its usual carefree and unrehearsed manner, Information, Please, tonight presents its veterans, John Kieran of the New York Sun and Franklin P. Adams, along with our guests, the co-author of Broadway's oldest hit, Life with Father, Mr. Russell Krauss, and the author of Broadway's youngest hit, Mr. Moss Hart, whose Army Air Force play, Winged Victory, has taken New York by storm. And before we start, we'd like to say hello and hope you like us to our new Canadian listeners who are starting the Information Please habit tonight. And it seems very appropriate, therefore, that we should begin with a question from Canada, sent in by Miss Phyllis Montgomery of Montreal. Let's get 2 out of 3 on this, gentlemen. How about it? In each of the following groups of three, one item did not occur in the same year as the other two. One item did not occur in the same year as the other two. Which was it? In other words, select the item that didn't occur in the same year. Now, here's the first set of three. Gone with the Wind was published. Body and Soul was being widely sung. George VI was crowned King of England. One of those, Mr. Hart?
Body and Soul was not being sung. The year Gone with the Wind was published.
That's quite right. Now, you don't have to date it for us, but can you give us an approximate date, Mr. Hart?
Well, Body and Soul was in Three's a Crowd, which was 1931, about.
1930, I have it. You may be right.
Yeah.
And the other two, George the Sixth, Coronation, and Gone with the Wind publication, what date would you say?
That's the only part of the question I knew.
Well, you're all right. You're quite right, Mr. Hart.
That's as much as I'll do on this program.
I'll approximate it around 1936 or 7.
That's quite right, Mr. Kieran. 1937. Well, that's perfectly answered, Mr. Hart and Mr. Kieran. From now on, no good, Mr. Hart?
Oh, it's fine now.
Oh, you all right? Now you feel better? Yeah. That's good. Now you can rest. Now try this one. Here's another set of three. Fulton invented the steamboat. Washington was inaugurated president for the first time. The French Revolution began. Which of those events didn't take place, Mr. Kieran?
The steamboat by Fulton was not in the same year as the inauguration of Washington, which was 1789, and also the first big outbreak of the French Revolution.
That's absolutely right, Mr. Kieran. Now can you date the invention of the steamboat
for
us?
Well, the date of the invention of the steamboat by Robert Fulton, if he did invent it, there's some dispute.
It's considerable.
Was
dispute.
1800 and, well, he sailed, he made one steam in 1809. I think 1806 was...
1807, I have it. Mr. Adams, do you remember that at
1807
all?
Is right.
1807. You were on with... Were you on the Hoboken Bank at that time?
No, I was helping Fulton.
Mr. Kieran, you said there's some question about who should...
I think there are other names have been mentioned for earlier experiments, but I believe that Fulton did sail a steamboat on the Seine in France.
Got anything to add to that, Mr. Krauss?
Well, a man named Fitch is really supposed to be.
Yes, one of them. Yes, Fitch. Poor John Fitch never gets the credit, but probably did invent the steamboat. Well, now try this one, gentlemen. Here's another set of three. Dempsey KO'd Jess Willard. Showboat was the popular musical comedy. Everybody was singing Alice Blue Gown. Two of those belong together, Mr. Hart?
Dempsey and Willard was not, of course, when Showboat was the great popular hit. Alice Blue Gown.
Now, which of those did not take place at the same time as the other two?
Showboat did not take place at the same time as Dempsey and Folk.
That's exactly right.
That's right.
Exactly right, Mr. Hart. Now, how about dating them for us?
Before my time, Dempsey.
That means
thank God.
Mr. Adams, Mr. Kieran.
1919.
Yes, for the two of them, and Showboat about 1927.
July 4th, 1919, for the Dempsey-Willard fight.
Perfectly right, Mr. Kieran. That gives us 3 out of 3. An interesting question. Now try this one from Jack Stigall of Chicago. This is about gangsters, gentlemen. gangsters of the theater or the screen. Get 2 out of 3. Identify them. In the first case, a gangster gets psychoanalyzed. In what play or movie? Mr. Hart.
A movie called Blind Alley.
That's right.
It was a play, too.
A play, too. What's the situation there? Do you remember it, Mr. Hart?
Oh, he holds up the house of the psychoanalyst, which I'd like to do sometime, incidentally.
You've got to pick your house.
I know it very well. And the doctor, the psychoanalyst, psychoanalyzes him.
Uh-huh.
And he ends up by not holding up the doctor. I guess that's the way the play ends.
It's about as improbable a plot as I ever heard of.
Not if you know psychoanalysts.
Well, you can take the psychoanalyst. I'll go on with the second part of this question, in which a gangster goes into a monastery. Now, what play, Mr. Krause?
It's a motion picture with Edward G. Robinson.
That's right.
And next Monday night, I will be able to remember the name of the picture.
Now, can anyone help out Mr. Krause? I'm going to give him full credit because he obviously has the right picture. The picture's name is... Mr. Hart, does it come back to you?
No, I almost know it. That's not good enough,
it's
though.
It's called Brother Orchid.
That's
Brother Orchid. A gangster goes into a monastery for what purpose, Mr. Krause?
He, I think, is attempting to take over the flower market, which the monks have established, and gangsterize it.
Is that it, or is he just hiding. Using the monastery as a place of refuge?
I think he is, yes. And then he does take over the flower business and legitimatize it.
All right. And that, as you say, was with Edward G. Robinson, who made the movie famous around 1940. Now, in what play or movie does a gangster inherit a title of nobility? Mr. Hart.
The Earl of Chicago.
Very good.
Robert Montgomery.
About how long ago? Very good picture, too.
Oh, about 3 or 4 years ago.
That's right, 1940. That gives us 3 out of 3. You gentlemen are tough to stump. Try this one. Mrs. Benjamin Cohn of Greensboro, North Carolina. Get 2 out of 3. From what word is each of these derived? The first word is hussy. Hussy. What's the word, Mr. Adams?
Housewife.
That's quite right, yes. Do you find any connection other than etymological, Mr. Adams?
Not on the air, I don't.
Mr. Adams, how did housewife become hussy, and what was the original pronunciation of housewife? Mr. Kieran?
Hussif.
Yes, hussif is right, and I guess they just left off the last part. Now, how about the word wench? Wench, W-E-N-C-H. What's it derived from? Wench, any idea? Why, gentlemen, you've forgotten your Anglo-Saxon.
Monkey wench.
No, not a chance. It comes from the Anglo-Saxon wensel, W-E-N-C-L, which means infant. And how the infant became a wench, I do not know. It took hundreds and hundreds of years before that happened. Try this one. Coquette comes from what? What's it derived from? Coquette.
From the French, I guess.
Part? And
it means attractive. Sweet.
Coquet?
Yes, the thing is coquet in French. It's quite nice. Quite admirable.
Delicate. Yeah. Well, where does that come from? Mr. Krause?
Well, coquette would be a little chicken, wouldn't it?
Well, it comes from cock, yes. French meaning cock-like, strutting like a cock. That's right. I'm going to give you credit for that.
Chicken croquette.
Chicken. Try this one, gentlemen, from George Vale of Glenside, Pennsylvania. Very interesting musical question. What mental trouble... By golly, Mr. Hart, here we are back among the psychiatrists again. What mental trouble, which a psychiatrist might treat, is suggested by each of these tunes? There are going to be 3 tunes played, and each one of them should suggest some mental state or mental disease that you might go to a psychiatrist to cure. Let's have the first.
Don't know that song.
I would be greatly helped by the title of the song, yes.
Yeah, how about it? No. Any idea? Does anyone know what the title of the song is?
No.
Want to have
it played again?
Sure, we'll have it played again. Go ahead, John.
Popular song.
Could he play a different song?
No, that's the same song. You're just listening to
it. Is that a popular song?
It was at one time. It's I Love Me. I Love Me, I Love Myself to Death, till I'm all out of breath and so forth.
Oh, that was not a popular song.
Well, wasn't it popular?
No.
It's popular here.
Wasn't
not
popular with me.
Mr. Adams?
That disease would be narcissism.
Yes, narcissism. What is narcissism, Mr. Adams?
When you look at your reflection in the pool.
Well, that's how it arose.
That's the derivation of it.
You mean every time a man looks at himself in a pool, he has to go to a psychoanalyst?
If he likes the reflection.
If he likes the reflection too much. Yeah, a man who is nuts about himself and has no ability to love anything outside of himself is a narcissist. Right, Mr. Hart?
Right.
Wonderful. I haven't any pool.
Now we get one wrong. Now let's have the next one. I have several hands on this. Mr. Kieran.
Split personality.
How do you figure that out?
Sometimes I'm happy, sometimes I'm blue.
Split personality? What were you going to say?
Manic depressive.
Yes, manic depressive. Is that right, Mr.
Absolutely.
Manic depressive, yes. A guy who's very high at one time and very low the next time. Mr. Adams, do you disagree?
I disagree. That's ambivalence.
No, it isn't.
Oh, gee, I never... What is that word again, Mr.
Ambivalence.
I didn't even think he could say it twice, much less know it. Now the third one.
He's being comical. Chemical.
That's, I ain't got nobody.
Yes, and what?
I don't love nobody, and I ain't...
You're all right.
I ain't got nobody.
Yeah?
And the mental...
Hey, would be what, would you say?
I know it. It's the story of my life.
Well, this is only a half-hour show. Mr. Mr. Kieran?
I'd just say a mental depressive state, that's all. Simply.
Yes.
Nobody... cares for me.
Yes, I think a depressive state,
or more than that.
But, well, more than that, Mr. Hart.
Oh, it cost me a lot of money to find out.
Yeah. Not on this program. An inferiority complex, maybe. Do you think that Bert Williams,
that
when he sang that, wouldn't
that
be, I ain't got nobody and nobody cares for me, Mr. Krause? Would you say that?
Sure. Well, I should think so, yes. But I think there's a name for the sort of person that just floats and is detached from his body, too.
You do?
A technical name.
Yes, there is. I'm trying to remember.
That's
right. Sam Small.
That's another one. We'll pick that one up.
I'm glad we don't remember it. I'll accept Mr. Kieran's answer. It seems to me perfectly sensible. Now
sometimes called Elma.
Pardon?
Sometimes called Elma. Just Elma.
Yes, or somebody of the same name. Now try this one from Julian Falk of Chicago. Can you give three quotations which mention terms used in billiards or pool? Is that clear? Now, I don't know which of you is a pool player. Mr. Adams, I know, plays pool. Mr. Adams?
It's English as you see it on Broadway. That's a song.
That's very good. English as you see it on Broadway. English is a pool term. Now think of any other term used in pool or billiards and give me a quotation, a verse or prose. Come, come, gentlemen. Come, come. Mr. Hart.
After the ball.
Yes, after the ball. Sure, very good. After the ball was over. Very good. Mr. Krause, there's a light in your eye.
I'm in a pocket.
And
I am.
In a pocket. Sort of, Mr. Adams.
Well, there's one from, kind of from Pinafore.
Let's have it.
I command a right good cue.
Yes. Of course, that is using the actual word, cue.
It's really cruel.
Yeah. Mind your P's and Q's, Mr. Adams. Now, how about Massey's in the cold, cold ground, Mr. Adams? Very good. Sure. Very good, Mr.
How about the Green Bay's tree?
I'll take it. Green Bay's tree. All right. And now for a timely musical question, just made to order for our Heinz reporter. Ben Growler. Ben, do you recognize this melodious tidbit?
Why, that's the song we always used to sing in school at Thanksgiving time. Goes over the river and through the woods to grandmother's house we go. Well, this year there'll be precious little civilian traveling to the old homestead for Thanksgiving dinner. But there will be plenty of us going back to family reunions on wings of thought, taking the high road of memory that leads swiftly and surely home. You can almost hear that hustle and bustle in the kitchen. You can smell that rich, warm, tantalizing fragrance that comes stealing out of an oven when a turkey is taking on its final, sizzling, golden brown. And can you ever forget the look of the laden table? The celery in its cut-glass dish and all the different pickles and relishes. Fat, pale spikes of dill, chopped India relish, and the crisp, cool, green, sliced cucumber pickle flecked with amber mustard seed. And during the last 74 years, there's been many a table like that in many a home where Heinz 57 varieties have been bidden to Thanksgiving dinner time after time like the old and trusted friends they are. This year, too, though your grocer's stocks may be more limited, you'll still find plenty of old-fashioned fixins for your Thanksgiving dinner among Heinz 57 varieties.
Thank you, Ben Grauer. Are you recovered, Mr. Adams?
Yes, but we have all those things except the turkey.
I don't think that Mr. Hines can supply you with a turkey. Try this one from Joseph B. Stamp of Lynbrook, Long Island. Quote a line in which each of these phrases occur. There are going to be three of them. I think we ought to get all three. The first phrase is, from hour to hour. Mr. Kieran.
And so from hour to hour we ripe and ripe, and then from hour to hour we rot and rot, and thereby hangs a tale.
That's perfect, Mr. Kieran. What's
that's
the problem?
Touchstone in As You Like It.
In As You Like It, Act 2, Scene 7. Is it Touchstone or is it Jacques? I'm not sure.
That is, it was Jacques retelling Touchstone's account.
We're both right, which is not usual on this program. Now, how about this one? Day After Day, a line of poetry in which the phrase day after day appears. Oh, we should get that. That's not very hard. Day after day. Mr. Adams?
There is a song that goes happy moment day after day.
There is?
Yes, there is.
What's the name of that song?
I don't know, but the man who wrote it was Balfe.
Well, that settles it. I suppose I have to accept it. I don't know where you pick these things up, Mr. Adams. Mr. Hart?
You wouldn't settle for tomorrow and tomorrow.
You're too premature. Now, I was thinking of day after day, we stuck, nor breath, nor motion, as idle as a painted ship upon a painted ocean. Mr. Kieran, that's from what poem?
The Ancient Mariner.
Yes, but I'm sure that Mr. Adams is right. How about this one? Week in, week out. Week in, week out. Mr. Kieran?
That's Longfellow, isn't it? The village blacksmith?
That's right. Week in, week out. From morn till night, you can hear his bellows blow. Very tough stumping you gentlemen tonight. Try this one from Carl R. Canterbury of Moline, Illinois. What well-known war planes are suggested by this music? Each of them might suggest some kind of plane used in the current conflict. Get two out of three and let's have the first, Mr. Kahn. Mr. Krause.
A zero.
Why?
I got plenty of zero. I got plenty of nothing.
I got plenty of nothing, yes. The Jap fighter plane. We hope it'll be true by the time this war is over. Now try the second, Mr. Kahn. Well, this can't go on forever, Mr. Adams.
Pirate.
Is there a plane called a pirate?
I don't know. It is a glorious thing to be a pirate king.
Yes, and it would be even more glorious if you got the right answer. Mr. Kieran?
Navy Corsair.
Corsair, yes. What is the Corsair? What type of plane is it?
Is it a dive bomber?
It's a carrier-based fighter plane, I believe, and Corsair and Pirate are somewhat similar. Did you throw that into Mr. Kieran's lap, Mr. Adams?
No, I never thought of the Corsair. I didn't know about it.
Now you know, don't you, in case this should ever come up again. Now try the third one, Mr. Kahn. Mr. Hart.
That's stormy weather.
It is.
I have to get the plane,
you
too.
You have to get the plane. Mr. Kieran.
Stormovic, the Russian.
Say, that's very good. I hadn't thought of that. Stormovic, very good. Is there any American plane that might remind you of? Oh,
the
I
other
think
plane?
At least two. Mr. Kieran.
Thunderbolt, P-47.
Yes, the Hurricane.
Yeah, Hurricane, that's Hurricane. An English plane.
That's an English plane. About you, how about Lightning? Do we have a plane called Lightning?
Yes, it's a P-38 Lockheed Interceptor.
All right. That gives us three out of three and sends us on to this one from Beatrice Merrick of Springfield, Massachusetts. What in a line of poetry is described as white as? In other words, a line of poetry in which the comparison white as is made. Mr. Adams.
Wreck of the Hesperus.
How do you figure that out? Gee, maybe I've got
you. Bosom as white as the hawthorn flax that grows in the month of May.
You know, I don't remember it as that. Is flax white? Flax white? I don't know. Mr.
White as the hawthorn buds that
white
open in the month of May.
That sounds right, yes. White as the hawthorn buds. I'll accept that. Mr. Kieran, Mr. Krause, Mr. Hart, there's an even simpler one. Its fleece was white as snow. Yes. Now we've got white. How about black? Black as. A line of poetry, Mr. Kieran.
Oh, I forgot about the line of poetry. I was going to give you a line by Carlyle.
I'll take it.
Black as ash buds in December. He said that Tennyson brought that to his attention.
Where's the line from? Is it from Carlyle?
It's from Carlyle. Yes.
Don't know it.
He was very angry about it, too.
Goody, goody. How about it, Mr. Hart?
Dark to me is the city, black to me is the night.
That's black to me is the night, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
I said black as. Mr.
Oh, black.
Adams?
Black is the pit from pole to pole.
That would be the right one, yes, from Henley's Invictus. And now how about blue as? We've got white, black. Now how about blue? Blue as. Any line of poetry with blue as in it?
The sky.
Yes, there must be one.
There are several. Now, Mr. Adams, you had it before. Blue were her eyes as the fairy flax. What were you going to say, Mr. Kieran?
Blue as if the sky let fall a flower from its cerulean wall. That's to a fringed gentian by Bryant.
That's a lovely one, Mr. Kieran.
And a popular song goes, does it not, Mr. Hart? Blue is the night above
blue
me.
Blue is the night, yes.
Something blue, something wrong. Well, that gives us three colors out of three. Try this from Leon Farb of Brooklyn, New York. What critical event of World War II occurred in these months? The first month is September. I have to get two out of three on this. A critical event, an important event of the present war occurred in the month of September. Well, there might have been several. Mr. Adams?
I think one was the Atlantic Charter.
No, I don't think so.
It was August.
I don't think so. Mr. Kieran?
The invasion of Poland?
Yes, the invasion of Poland would be right. That's a second guess. I'm going to call that wrong because Mr. Adams came to the front too quickly. Now, how about June? An important event in the war that occurred in June. Mr. Hart?
Would that be the Quebec Conference?
No. You boys are simply sold on conferences this evening. Mr. Kieran?
I think France gave up in June.
Yes. Paris is occupied, and it signed the armistice on June 22nd. Mr. Kieran, you should come in first, not second.
And I can't come in until I'm called.
How about November? How about November? An important event occurred, Mr. Krause?
Moss Hart's play, Winged Victory, open.
Oh, that's very, very nice and complimentary and true. That's not a critical event, except for the critics.
The
United Nations landed in North Africa on November 7th, 1942, and I think the announcement of the Moscow Pact was November 1st, and, as you say, the opening of Mr. Hart's play. Well, we only got one out of three on that. That sends $57 in war bonds and stamps to Mr. Farb and a set of the Britannica. Now, this is an historical question for our Heinz reporter. Ben Grauer, can you give us the rest of this verse and the event to which it refers? The heavy night hung dark, the hills and waters o'er.
When a band of exiles moored their bark on the wild New England shore. Now, that's from Felicia Hemans' poem, The Landing of the Pilgrim Fathers. You know, I have an idea that landing also was the occasion of an unofficial but heartfelt thanksgiving. For Plymouth Rock, bleak as it was, must have looked pretty good to the pilgrims after all those stormy months at sea. This year, we're thinking a lot more about the meaning of Thanksgiving and less about having all the usual accessories to the feast. What does it matter if we can't have turkey? A roast chicken is good eating, too. And we can still have stuffing, an extra pan of stuffing, if you please. We'll start the meal in the good old-fashioned style with Heinz's wonderful cream of tomato soup, whose rich and rosy glow on the plate is the best way in the world to say, welcome to our table. And may I suggest that you order your Heinz soup, pickles, relishes, and jellies early this week, tomorrow if possible. You'll be helping your grocer and yourself.
Thank you, Ben Grauer. And now try this one. Mr. Hart, have you ever heard of a man named Kaufman?
I have indeed.
We have a question from Mr. George S. Kaufman of the city.
Well, I don't get it.
Think you can skip that one, Mr. Fadman. I happen to know him, and he has $57 and an encyclopedia.
He also has, on occasion, a very good collaborator, Mr. Hart.
And I'll bet he's listening, too, to see that I don't get it.
Well, now let's see what you can do with this. It'll be an awful thing if you don't get this, Mr. Hart. Here are the last lines of several plays. Can you name the plays? We have to get two out of three. The first last line is, it'll be much easier in Sydney. It'll be much easier in Sydney. Now we have two famous playwrights here, Mr. Krause.
I'll take a chance if nobody else wants to guess.
Shoot.
I'd say Rain.
That's very good. That's quite right. Rain. Who speaks the line?
Sadie Thompson.
Sadie Thompson, yes. That's right. John Colton Clements Randolph's play Rain, based on a story by Somerset Maugham.
Before my time, Mr. Fanning.
Well, maybe the next one's before your time, too, Mr. Hart. Your youth is a decided advantage to you, isn't it?
Oh, and I'm hanging on to it, too.
Have patience. Try this one. Here's another famous last line. God help me from now on.
That's the show-off.
That's right.
By George Kelly.
Yes, you weren't more than 11 years old at that
time. My nurse took me.
Did you have a nurse even then, Mr. Hart?
And now.
The show-off by George Kelly is right. Who speaks the line? Do you remember?
Mrs. Fisher.
Say, that's very good, yes. Very few people except playwrights, of course, remember the names of characters.
Well, that was a wonderful play.
Yes, it's a very good play. George Kelly's the show-off. And now the last line is, construction department, please. Construction department, please.
That was a play written by Mr. Kaufman and myself.
Yes.
Once in a Lifetime, it was called. A very good play, too.
It was good?
Yes,
it was. I'll say that, too. I'll add that, too. And may we have 1 minute out to make a face at Mr. Kaufman now, Mr. Hart?
No $57, no Encyclopedia Britannica to Mr. Hart's collaborator. Now try this one. From Edna Adler of Red Bank, New Jersey. What military service would a man be in if in the course of his duties he spoke of going topside? What
branch of the service, Mr. Kieran?
He'd be in the Navy.
He would. What would he mean, Mr. Kieran?
He'd go on what we landlubbers would call a open deck.
Yes, on the deck. Mr. Adams, were you going to say anything different from Mr. Kieran?
I was going to say nothing else because I read about it in Mr. John Mason Brown's book.
What's the name of the book?
To All Hands.
And a very good book, too. Try this one. What service would he be in if he spoke of going upstairs? Upstairs. Mr.
He'd be in the Air Corps.
He would be in the Air Force. What would he mean?
He'd mean going up on a flight.
Yes,
up in the air.
Going aloft. Is that slang of just of this war, Mr. Hart?
I think it is.
I don't remember it as of last war.
I wouldn't remember the last war, Mr.
You have enough trouble with this one.
His nurse didn't take him to that.
No.
Might bring that nurse of yours around one of these days.
I will. Very nice woman.
I think we could use her on this program. How about the service that a man would be in if he spoke of going over? Going over. Simple word, Mr. Krause.
Well, I think he'd be in the Army if going overseas.
No. No, he might, yes. But it has a technical meaning, Mr. Kieran.
Well, it might be airborne troops.
No, I should think, Mr. Krause.
Parachute, maybe.
No, infantry. It simply means an attack is to be launched. To go over means that you're going out on an attack. We got 2 out of 3 on that, and that sends us on to this question from Norma J. Lund of New York. Now, according to the song, in a certain play, a girl made her mind up. What play was that? Made her mind up. Mr. Adams.
That was Mr. Hart's play.
Yes, it belongs
Lady
to
in
the
dark.
World, you know. What was it called?
Lady in the Dark.
Lady in the Dark. And who was the lady who made her mind up?
Jenny.
Jenny, yes.
Jenny Lawrence.
Yes.
Jenny Hart.
Right. Now, according to the song, in a certain play, a girl couldn't say yes, couldn't say no. What play was that, Mr. Krause?
Oklahoma.
Is that so? Mm-hmm. Prove it.
Celeste Holm, and the title of the song is I Can't Say No.
Yes, but I said couldn't say yes, couldn't say no. Mr. Hart.
There's another play called The Cat and the Fiddle.
Ah, yes. Your memory is better than Mr. Krause's.
I finished second and paid $4.80.
However, you can pay out on this one. Couldn't say no in what play, Mr. Krause?
Now I'll take a chance on Oklahoma, Celeste Holm song.
That's quite right. And that does give us 2 out of 3, and that's all we'll have time for. Thank you, Mr. Krause, and thank you, Mr. Hart, for joining the party this evening. Tonight, the H.J. Hines Company has paid out $57 in war bonds and stamps and one set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Next week, along with Mr. Adams, Mr. Kieran, and Mr. Levant, we will have as our guest the distinguished musician and piano virtuoso, Mr. Arthur Rubinstein. Remember, send your questions and the correct answers to Information, Please, at 570 Lexington Avenue, New York 22, New York. And now, Ben Grauer.
Until next Monday evening at this time, in behalf of H.J. Hines Company, whose famous 57 varieties of flavorful food have been welcome guests at America's Thanksgiving dinner tables for the past 74 years, we wish you good health and good cheer.
Information, Please, came to you from New York. This is the National Broadcasting Company.